you believe assault is an act, not an adjective. Your safety is not just on the gun, it is the gun. Freedom is a fundamental human right. Welcome to your show, Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes. Your safety is your responsibility, not the government's, not anybody else's. Be a citizen, not a subject. Better yet, be a listener. Because it's an inalienable right, not a privilege. The Two-Way Radio Show with Bill Carnes is live, right now. Call 1-800-313-9443.
Good morning. Sending for Bill is Ernest Hancock this morning. Thank you for the opportunity, Bill. You know, we have a lot of things to talk about. You know, we've been involved in Second Amendment issues since forever. And sitting in studio with me is my good friend Eric Cartridge from the Cartridge Family Band.
Hey, Ernie. Thanks for having me.
Now, Eric, you know, we've both been activists since I've probably met you in the 90s, you know.
Late 90s.
You know, and we've been doing this long, and we got some street cred, you know, on the Second Amendment thing, and we have an opinion. And, you know, we'll give you just a little bit of our background real quick in this first short segment so that you kind of get an idea or perspective on this thing. And you guys keep hearing about the MIAC report and Southern Poverty Law Center and the list that they had, and if you got a Ron Paul bumper sticker or Chuck Baldwin or Barr, you know, that kind of thing. Well, they had one of those lists back in 94, and it was the same kind of thing. We're going to go get the militia, and they would list state by state, you know, starting with the A's down to the Z's, and the first A was Arizona, and that's safe. Second Amendment is for everyone. Got to watch out for those guys. Got to go get them. You know, and who's the name on top of that list? Ernest Hancock! Let me tell you how that happened. What we did here in Arizona in 94, we did an initiative that would allow for unrestricted concealed carry, no permit or anything, because that's what our state constitution says anyway. But, you know, they don't care about that. So what we did is we go, all right, we're going to be a unrestricted concealed carry state. Again, like we're supposed to be. We filed an initiative. You have a political action committee that you file in support of the initiative. That's how law works here. Well, what do we name it? You know, one of the guys came up with, you know, safe. Second Amendment is for everyone. Are you a safe gun owner?
Perfect.
Or an unsafe gun owner? Are you a safe legislator or an unsafe legislator? So we had safe legislators that would come out and speak for it. And one of the head guys that, you know, introduced the bill and the legislature for it later became Speaker of the House based on the popularity of that issue. Of course, they always, you know, you don't get to be Speaker of the House unless you're a bad guy. But anyway, so you can see how the Second Amendment's always a strong issue for people. Well, what happened was the Southern Poverty Law Center created this list along with the ADL, Anti-Defamation League, and they sent it out to every single sheriff and law enforcement across the nation. I get a call from Sheriff Arpaio, and he goes, hey, Ernie, you're on the list. I'm like, woohoo, made it. I'm on the top. You know, it's just invalidated. It's just pretend. I didn't, you know, let me tell you, this is one thing. My father, I grew up with guns. You know, my father had a lot of, you know, various kinds of guns. He was a quick draw artist and all kinds of stuff. So I'm just, you know, whenever I needed a firearm going camping or something or thought I need one for my safety, I just go borrow one of my dad's. You know, we did this initiative. I didn't even own a firearm. You know, these guys, we go to protest and everything. Finally, one guy gave me a 9x18 Makarov, you know, piece of crap, Russian Makarov here, just, you know, so I'd have something because they were embarrassed. Ernie, you're killing me, man. Take this. So, and then, you know, because we were poor, I had a lot to do with it. But, you know, since then, I have acquired a couple. But the thing is that, you know, it's all political. And it's all about power, and it's about who has the power and who's afraid of you having the power. We know this. As time went on, we got into, you know, other things. Now, Eric, he's in a band that would play quite a bit, you know, and they would, you know, different events, and we had a recall on John McCain that was right before 9/11, and then 9/11 happened, and what? All of a sudden, that went away. Yes. But when we come back, we're going to talk about, you know, there's a bunch of stuff went on to the 90s and going on now, the same thing for the same reasons. We'll talk about it here on Bill's show in just a little bit.
Rule 1, assume it's loaded. Rule 2, Don't point it at anything you're not willing to destroy. Rule 3. Listen to the 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes. 1-800-313-9443.
Hey, welcome back to 2A Radio, Bill Carnes Show. Ernest Hancock setting in for Bill. Thanks, Bill. You know, the one thing that we want to do, I just want to get you an introduction. You know, we've been at this for a long time, and I'm telling you, in 1994, when the Internet first started going, we had Larry Pratt from Gun Owners of America at a workshop that we had similar to Freedom's Phoenix. Oh, yeah, that's right. I'm publisher of Freedoms, with an S, Freedom's Phoenix. .com, and we have Declare Your Independence, Ernest Hancock, that starts at, about 2 hours from now. So we're going to have some fun there. We're going to be talking about the Constitution. Should we have it or not? You know, what caused all these problems? What mechanism did they use to take away all our rights? They had to have a piece of paper to do it. What was it they used?
The Constitution.
The Constitution! Is it an evil document or not? You know, we're going to have a discussion. It'll be interesting. Boy, you'll want to weigh in on that one. Let's go get it. You know, we're going to find out. You know, you give them pieces of paper and authority and shiny badges, and, you know, it's amazing to think that they wouldn't, like, use them. You know? So we're going to see what happens. But the one thing that I wanted to, you know, the Second Amendment, we're big, big. Eric and I, we've been on this for, we make a big deal out of this. And what happened when we did the concealed carry initiative, in the beginning, all of the gun show, I mean, the gun stores and so on, oh, heck no, don't put that petition here. We don't have nothing. They were afraid of the BATF. They did not want to have any kind of repercussions on them as a business because they count on their being able, with permission from the government, to be able to sell firearms to the peoples. Well, we don't want to be able to, you know, have that curtailed.
Well, as long as the people fill out the omnipresent forms 4473.
Absolutely. You got to fill out the form. Got to get on the list. Now, the other thing that happened as we progressed through this, when they started going after the militias and so on in the 90s, a lot of people don't realize, you know, you have a much wider view from, a philosophical bent. You know, you kind of look, why? Why? What do they care? What we found out is that for the same reasons they're doing kind of here they come again, was they had to convince the Japanese and the Germans and the Pacific Rim countries and so on that when George Bush, Herbert Walker, when he did Read My Lips, No New Taxes, then declared taxes and the people rised up. We're starting to rise up, okay? It's before the Internet. You know, they started coming out going, hey, man, what the heck? Then all of these people stopped buying our debt, just like China's starting to pull now. They go, you know what? You guys had a revolution before. You kicked out the largest empire on the known planet at the time, you know, the British Empire. They're threatening to do it again. You know, so we're like, man, you better get your slaves in line. So they did. They started doing all kinds of, you know, the Brady Bill and the assault weapons ban and all this. All that was to give confidence that they could milk us more. They could keep raising taxes.
Well, it was mainly PR, too. As long as they could convince the buyers of the foreign debt, right?
Yeah, no, yeah. It's just a psyop.
Yeah.
You know, because what happened? More people bought guns.
Right.
I did. That's when I bought my first one, right before the Brady Bill came out. I'm all right, now it's time for I'm going to, you know, pawn a TV or something. You know, whatever I got to do. I'm going to buy me a firearm before I have to go through and get on the list. So you're on another list, but, you know, there's multiple layers of lists.
Well, you're on the Patriot list. Isn't that what...
Oh, yeah. We had Heidi Beirich, which she is the... Yeah, director of special projects on the Southern Poverty Law Center on the show. You know, she's nice enough. One came on. We got to talk about it and so on. And I was asking her about this old report in 94. I'm like, you know, would you guys just pull stuff off the internet? You just made it up. I mean, it's obvious what you did. Heck, you know, my local sheriff is calling like, whoa, what the heck? You know?
And you didn't even own a gun. How did you get on a list?
Yeah, it doesn't matter. That's not how this
the
works.
The militia list, the guy without the gun.
So she goes, there, you know, there's hate groups and so on. And then there's like, she goes, well, you're on the list that you would like. And I'm like, what's that? She's not on the hate list. You're on the patriot list. And I'm like, there's a difference? There's a distinction? I don't think there was a distinction back then.
Yeah, I doubt it.
So it's just, you know, it's just information. You know, as people start to, everybody gets all worried about the whatever list they're on. You know, you don't have to worry about whether you're on the list or not. Just discredit the list. You know, lists don't mean anything. You know, well, you know, it does when they, you know, got you on, you know, ABC News and they're doing whatever. But, you know, we get known well enough that, you know, it doesn't matter. So then we have, now the same kind of thing, and it's the same people. You know, they started amping up this rhetoric about they're going to go take the guns in Arizona because this guy, Kostrick, William Kostrick, had a sidearm when he went to an Obama healthcare thing in New Hampshire, and he was from Scottsdale. So they made a big deal out of him. We're going, oh, I see where this is going. And it wasn't the same kind of people. It was the same people. Rahm Emanuel was, you know, chief of staff now for Obama, was a senior political advisor for Clinton from 93 to 98. So he was all behind all this stuff, okay? Then you had, you know, of course, the Clintons. You had, you know, Hillary still in there, and Bill, you know, he's still in there. So you have, you know, Hillary there as Secretary of State. So she was obviously around. And then Janet Napolitano, which is now head of Homeland Security. I mean, goose-stepping around with the power now, got the power. Well, back then, in the late 90s, she was the prosecutor on the Viper Militia thing. It was all the rage here in Arizona.
Well, no, I thought they were called Team Viper. It was Janet and her people that started calling them the militia, right?
Right. The Team Viper came from, they were a shooting team. You know, they compete. And so they go, well, they're Viper Militia. They got, like, guns and bullets come out the end and stuff.
Did they have a compound?
No.
Oh, okay.
But, you know, and we knew something. One of the good friends of ours, Dean, you know, was a good friend of ours. And he got 5.5 years he did. So we created a thing called Viper Reserve. And what it was, we just documented all the stuff. We just go to the courts, you know, we keep all the papered records. If you Google or go on Freedom's Phoenix, you know, Freedoms with an S, Phoenix.com, you go there and you look at, you just hit the search button and you put in Viper. Or you just do a Google on Viper Reserve, you know, boom, it'll explode all over the place. We tracked all this. There was a $5 million lawsuit against Janet Napolitano for the prosecution that they did. La, la, la. Even within a week, you had Ted Koppel on Nightline going, this isn't what they told us. They weren't even charged with all the stuff that they said they did. It was all manufactured, and we knew, and we know, that they're going to do it again. They have to. It's a distract. China's not buying. We're not buying. You got these, you know, millions of people coming to Washington, D.C., and they're not armed this time. But, you know, I'm getting the impression you're not going to be able to keep milking them. I'm just wondering.
Actually, at some point, I don't think it's even about being armed as much as the fact that if millions of people wake up and go, you know what, it's not our debt and we're just not paying. I mean, even if they sit down like Gandhi and do nothing.
No. They want you to fire on them. See, that's another thing. Oh, yeah.
Well, we don't do that in the Lovelution.
Yeah, Lovelution. You know, protect yourself. You know, be ready to protect yourself. Be able to protect yourself. Because, you know, when, you know, you need to. There's no getting around that. That's just, you know, the way it is. But what they want to do is they want to know who are the people that would rise up, against the state. Okay? Well, who are those people? And we get, I was just playing a voicemail. You know, a guy that's been, you know, calling a lot, you know, for Freedom's Phoenix. We are doing a lot of activities here against the mandatory vaccines, and we activists and out of our workshop here at Freedom's Phoenix, and we do a lot of stuff. And we're best known here probably nationally for the Ron Paul Revolution. That revolution logo we designed came out of here. And once we did that, it exploded all over the place, and it was the message behind it. You know, of course we want a revolution. We want a love-evolution.
A revolution of the mind.
Of the mind, between the ears, you know. We're going to put daisies in gun barrels, you know, and hopefully they won't get blown away out of them. But the thing is that if you're going to use violence, if you're going to, you know, rise up, you know, they got bigger guns. You know, that's not where the battle's fought and won. You know, the battle is in you declare your independence. It's real simple. And you don't even need a government form. You know, so now we're getting in. You know, the Second Amendment, though, is like a Vulcan mind meld with the state. You want to know what their intentions are. You find out what they're going to be doing with your ability to defend yourself against them. It's just that you can tell. You know, if you have a 130-pound woman and they're saying she can't protect herself against a 230-pound man, you know, on the seedy streets that they created, okay, you know, then they're a bad guy. I mean, it's just, you can just tell. It's how they see you as an individual. Who has the power? Well, the individual is supposed to have the power. The state's there to protect the individual, you know, so that they can have the power, at least to defend themselves. And then the only function government has is to defend against force and fraud. Well, who's the biggest force and fraud purveyor? I'm going, man, you guys are, man, you're way outside that envelope. We're going to talk about it on my show in an hour and a half. Yeah, it's going to be good. You want it right here on this, on RBN. So you pay attention to that. And we'll be talking about the Continental Congress of 09. You know, we had the voting here and so on. And a big advocate for that, wanted to discuss it. I went to Jekyll Island. I was one of the few that went to Jekyll Island, and we, you know, talked about it. And I, you know, had plenty to say about it. But my thing was, is if I don't have the option of voting none, then what kind of convention is it? I want, you know, whether you want no government or not this one or not this federal over the state thing or not, that's not the point. Do I get that option? If I don't have that option, then what kind of choice is it? You know, so that's going to be the discussion.
You mean you're not willing to subject yourself to the whims of the majority through a vote?
Yes, and
so
on top of that,
you, Ernie,
thousands of miles away, and a federal kind of make everybody. And they go, oh, well, no, this is decided. No, this issue's already been decided, Ernie. It was called Grant versus Lee. After the Civil War, man, it's already been decided. You federalize. You're not a Georgian or Massachusettsan or whatever anymore. You're American.
Well, we thought it was decided after the Revolutionary War.
Yeah, it was states.
we were a bunch of states, right.
But, you know, United States, with that little small U. You know, I hear a lot of people, especially in the Second Amendment community, they bring that up a lot. You know, they'll say, yeah, well, this is United. Until it comes, you start challenging certain things. Wait. No, we're big U there, but not here. You know, I'm just going, you know, it's a mind. Got to be consistent. You know, got to be consistent. The Second Amendment thing, I'm telling you, it is a Vulcan mind meld with the state. It's how you can tell who the good guys are and the bad guys. Those who just want to be left alone and those that will not leave you alone. I'll leave it at that. Who are they? We'll talk about more when we come back here on 2A Radio and the Bill Karn Show. We'll be right back. Yeah, welcome back to 2A Radio with Bill Karns. You know, and Bill Karns had taken a day off and asked if, you know, I'd come in and say hello to everybody. Hello. You know, a lot of people probably know me from on Second Amendment issues. When Obama came to Phoenix and they had the black man with a gun, an AR-15, you know, Chris B., I was the guy that was interviewing him live on RBN. You know, we had, you know, they're going, you know, well, that was like a stage thing. CNN's all freaking out. You planned that. And I'm going, no, it was live, you know, the RBN network got on Republic Broadcasting Network. Yeah, we make sure we got that out on CNN. But the thing is that, you know, they go, well, you know, it's staged if you didn't tell them.
Right. You mean they don't plan their interviews? These are all just random things that happen?
They were so upset that they tried to, you know, well, we know that you and we have pictures of you on the internet with him before. And I go, yeah, we put them up. And, you know, our audience knew what was going on, was coming. Heck, the Phoenix Police Department knew. We had, you know, other media knew that was there. So, I mean, you know, it's not my fault you don't know what the heck you're doing. So if you just Google CNN Ernest Hancock, it'll come up and you'll get the idea of what we did and why. And the reason was, is I know that they're going to try and do the same thing they did in the mid-90s now, because it's a distraction and it's a, you know, an excuse for them to, you know, the threat of the man and all, they got to come get it. And I wanted to preempt it because the police knew, they went through this with us back. They knew they were being used. They knew it was all crap. They knew it was a PR stunt from the big boys. They know, but they don't do anything about it because it comes from the top down, and we got a, you know, anti-vaccination of first responders thing going on here in Arizona. If you go to freedomsphoenix.com, you can read about it, and we'll have more stuff on it later. But the thing is that we are like, look, we need the government to defend us against this needle being put into our flesh. I claim property rights on my body. Can I do that? Can I get an amen for that one? And we want to defend the first responders. This is firemen, police, medical workers and teachers. So we were just saying, look, you know, Well, I get a call yesterday from the city manager's office. We've been really pressing this. Press been calling them, and they basically said this. And we'll, I don't have the tape for you, but we'll have it in our show. They are like, well, we're going to defer to the state. Yeah. They'll be telling us, well, we're not requiring it. Yeah, Mr. Murgatroyd, we wouldn't require it. We're not going to offend our guys, you know, about to fire them, but, you know. So this is the game that they're playing. It is all amping up. And if it's that bad that they got to have Homeland Security mandating people do anything, I can't think of a better reason for people to have, you know, firearms. That'd be a good idea. What do you think, Eric?
The revolution's in your mind, Ernie.
You know, and I want to make sure that we emphasize that, because I'm like, where do you think it is? You know, the revolution's between the ears, you know, years, decades before you actually have the shot heard around the world. And there will be one. I mean, it's inevitable. I mean, we're one day closer to freedom. You know, it just gets really messy first.
Or maybe not so messy. I mean, look at the Soviet Empire. I mean, the dollar's going the way of the ruble. The empire just couldn't afford to sustain itself and said, guess what, Czechoslovakia, you're free. Guess what, Poland, you're free. We can't afford this empire anymore. Nobody will pay for it.
Yeah, we don't have gas for the tanks.
Right, exactly. That's it, right. You know, jet fuel's mighty expensive, and, you know, we have nothing to pay for it with. China won't loan us any more money. You're done.
Well, I want to talk about some of the stuff in the news. You know, Bloomberg was being, you know, ornery. You know, what was Bloomberg doing?
Yeah, I guess he's recently become a Fed or something. He's doing, even though he's the mayor of New York, he's been doing stings at gun shows in Nevada, Ohio, and Tennessee lately. He sends in private investigators.
Wait. Bloomberg from New York and sending them to other states?
Right, the mayor of New York is doing law enforcement.
Start over. Okay, what?
Well, that's what I said when I read about it. But
well,
yeah.
How is he doing this?
Well, he hires, I guess, I don't know if the city of New York, I think the city of New York actually pays for it. It's not from Bloomberg's personal billions. But he hires private investigators, you know, they're not like city cops or anything, but private investigators to go to other states and pretend to be straw purchasers or prohibited possessors, go to their gun shows and see if they can buy guns, you know, after telling, you know, private sellers, you know, well, I don't know if I could pass a background check. Will you sell me the gun anyway? And, you know, that kind of thing. And then his private investigator secretly videotapes stuff and,
He has to go out of state and hire them. Man, he's really fishing.
Well, yeah, I mean, his claim is that, well, how did all these illegal guns get into our police state of New York? Well, it's because they have freedom elsewhere, and we've got to, you know, make these people look bad.
Wow. You know what this is building up to. I remember this. This is McCain's gun show loophole stuff.
Yeah, it's exactly. It's the same exact thing. He's touting the gun show loophole.
Oh, tell us about, see how much time we got here. You know, we'll do it when we come back. We're about ready. We only got about a minute in this segment. But when we come back, you know, right before 9/11, there was a robust, with offices, thousands of people doing it. We were going to recall John McCain on just these issues. And it was rocking and rolling and whatnot. And then 9/11, and we got to come together, you know, kind of thing. We're just like, oh, got this guy still? No, please.
Right. All the so-called conservatives chickened out.
Yeah, oh, that was another thing. 2004, as a Libertarian candidate, I ran against John McCain. You know, that was interesting. And here in Arizona, we actually, you know, get to go to debates and stuff. We'll be right back here on Declare Your Independence and tell you what's going on behind the scenes a little bit more.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Radio with Bill Carnes, 1-800-313-9443.
All right, we're back, ladies and gentlemen. This is J.R. Moore, substituting for Bill Carnes. These spots you're hearing, Hemp USA, they ask a question, why the government won't let it be grown. I just want to take about 60 seconds and address that. Two reasons, the cotton industry and the timber industry. Now, for those who don't know, it is quite possible, and it happens all the time, to grow hemp with no THC. That's the chemical that allows people to get stoned when they smoke it. So if you can grow hemp without the chemical that makes people stoned, the drug part of it, why do they still make it illegal to grow it? Well, it's two reasons. The hemp, the cotton lobby, and the timber lobby. Timber because of paper. Hemp makes better quality paper than wood pulp will ever make. And it's cheaper. So that's one reason. Cotton. You make fabric out of hemp, a pair of blue jeans or a shirt. That pair of blue jeans will last you years, possibly 20 years. One pair of blue jeans before they wear out. So going back to the 1930s, the timber lobby and the cotton lobby, those industries, understood the threat that hemp posed to their two industries and their profits. Because hemp is a superior product for making paper and a superior product for making fabric for clothing or tents or sails or anything else, quite frankly. So that's why. Pure and simple, that's why. It's the greed and the ability of the timber industry and the greed and the ability of the cotton industry to suppress a competitor that has a far, far superior product. Now, getting back to these scenarios, before the break I was mentioning pretending to be asleep in your home when it's being broken into. Next would be being in a car at a stoplight that comes under attack. These things happen. Carjackings do happen. People's homes are broken into while they're asleep. And people are attacked while they're making a casual walk in their neighborhood or walking. And what I tell people in my pistol classes, you're most vulnerable between your motor vehicle and the door of whatever business or establishment that you're walking into. I had a lady in my class Saturday. She said, "Well, John, can I just keep my pistol in my car?" I said, "No, you need your pistol between your car and the door wherever you're going to. That's where you're most likely to be attacked. Once you're safely inside your vehicle with the windows up and the doors locked, you have a dramatic reduction in the possibility of being attacked. It drops off to almost nothing once you're in your car with the windows up and the doors locked. So that's another aspect of that. You have to have a positive mental attitude that you can prevail. And one of the things the anti-gunners, anti-gun liberals, are always saying about why they don't think us civilians can defend ourselves is because we don't have the ability to react quickly and properly to a threat. Well, that's absolutely not true. And there are studies done by criminologists, books written by, I think, Gary Kleck is one, that put that to rest, that most civilians, most of the time, do in fact react quickly enough and properly to a criminal, to an armed criminal threat, or unarmed as the case may be. It doesn't matter. Criminal is a criminal. So here's some things I want you to keep in mind regarding this. That you will first acquire a proper combat mindset and make it part of who you are. Determine, number two, that you will not be a victim of crime. Determine, number three, that you will prevail if someone attacks you. And last but not least, that you will constantly improve your skills and become a more confident, prepared individual and will be ready to take care of yourself. That's my advice in that regard. Now I want to move on to a different aspect of this, and that is not being a victim or coming under attack when you're in your motor vehicle. Now, first of all, you need to think of your motor vehicle as a defensive weapon in and of itself. Even the even a compact automobile is a couple of thousand pounds of steel, and has an engine in it that's fairly powerful that can make it go 100 miles an hour or more. There's a lot of power there, and a lot of weight, even in a compact automobile. But let's look at some of the basics. First of all, the vehicle has to be in excellent mechanical condition. That means a good, strong, dependable battery with properly clean terminals. It's the reason cars may not start in 2009 would basically be the same reason they didn't start in 1939, which would be a battery that worn out or has dirty connections. Nothing much has changed in 70 years in that regard. So make sure that the battery terminals are clean and that your battery is in good operating condition, so it's dependable. I may mention, I don't sell these, but I think you can probably find them on the Internet pretty quickly, a device that helps your battery stay in pristine condition. It's called PulseTech, P-U-L-S-E-T-E-C-H, PulseTech. They send a reverse charge into the battery to knock that sulfur buildup off the lead plates. That's why lead-acid batteries go bad. I always keep them on my cars and trucks, and my batteries last three times longer than without them. So anyway, the motor vehicle, tires. I've been using Michelin tires only since the early 1980s. And they never let me down. I had one catastrophic blowout. I ran across a piece of steel on the interstate at 60 miles an hour, and I had a catastrophic blowout. And I'm talking about probably, at this point, about 750,000 miles of driving, if not more. Every other time I've got a nail or a screw in the Michelin tire, I will notice a slow leak over a period of days. That warns me that there's something wrong. I take it to the technician, and they locate the nail or the screw. They remove it. They put a patch on the inside of the tire, and off I go. I love my Michelin tires. If you have a tire that you find just as dependable for yourself, then go for it. If you have a need that is even greater than a standard Michelin tire, they have what they call a zero-pressure model. Michelin's. There's a bit more expense, but you can literally have a hole in the sidewall the size of a quarter, through and through hole, that you can stick your finger in the sidewall the size of a quarter, and still drive on that tire for 50 miles. Now, isn't that special? If you have that need, and if you do, there'll be no doubt in your mind. That's the tire you want to go to, is a zero-pressure tire. I recommend, and these days in these modern vehicles, it's not too much of an issue, but electric windows so that you can put all the windows up or all the windows down if you need to. Now, what I would do and what you would do aren't necessarily the same thing. If I'm coming under attack by people that have bricks or stones or firearms, I'll put all the windows down for the following reason. First of all, the glass isn't going to stop anything heavy moving very fast. Second of all, if there is a projectile coming through the window, whether it's a rock or a brick or a bullet, that's one projectile. If it's coming through the glass, you have hundreds of secondary projectiles. So while you might be able to duck the rock or the brick or the bullet, you won't be able to duck the hundreds of secondary projectiles coming into the vehicle. Plus, you save the glass from being broken. You know, once you escape the danger zone, you have intact windows that you can put back up, as opposed to broken windows that obviously are gone. So that's how I would react, and that's what I would do. Is if I'm coming under attack by people with projectiles, I'll put all the windows down. If they're unarmed and just have hands, I'll keep the windows up. It's pretty difficult for even a fairly strong guy to break automobile glass with a bare with a fist. That's a pretty difficult thing to do. And that would be, you know, under those circumstances, of course, I would keep the glass up. When you're moving along in the motor vehicle, and in an urban or suburban area especially, always, always have an escape route. On a four-lane road, you stay to the lane at the middle of the road, next to the double, the white line there, as opposed to the curb lane. You want to stay in that left lane in a four-lane road. That gives you more opportunities for escape. When you're coming up to a light or at any time, you never get closer than one car length, even at a stoplight, a full car length between you and a vehicle in front of you. So if you have to escape, you can go either left or right as it need be. Don't get yourself in that curb lane unless you have to be there for reasons you have no control over, such as there's only a two-lane road, or you're about to make a right turn, and so forth. Don't get in that curb lane unless there's a really good reason for it. Always keep in mind your escape route. And if you have to stop really short of the car in front of you to keep an escape route open, then stop really short. If you have to keep two car lengths between you and the car in front of you, keep those two car lengths. Now, if I've got 100 women in a classroom, and I'm addressing personal security, if I ask these 100 women, have you ever been followed in your car by a man you did not know? At least half the hands will go up. That's the expected answer. At least half the hands will go up. That's pretty much across the board. I've done this dozens of times, so I know what the answer is going to be. It's a very scary thing, especially in the days before cell phones. A very scary thing for a woman to go through. Your first thing you need to know to satisfy yourself, is this person really following me? Well, here's how you can find out. You do get in a curb lane, and obviously you should do this in an area that you're familiar with. And most of the time you're going to be driving in the areas that you're familiar with. That's just the nature of how we live our lives. And you make four right-hand turns coming back to your original direction of travel on the same road. If you make four right-hand turns and this man is still behind you, clearly and obviously, no doubt whatsoever, he's following you. What do you do next? Well, I'll tell you what you don't do. You do not go home. Listen to me. You do not go home. That way they'll know where you live. Now, you should have a cell phone. I started giving these lectures. Almost nobody had cell phones, and I started out with these big clunky bag phones and then phones attached to the automobile and so forth. But, you know, almost all you listeners out there will have a cell phone these days. You get on the phone, you dial 911, and you identify yourself, the type and color of your car, the road you're on, and your direction of travel. Hopefully you will know the direction of travel, north, south, east, and west. You try to tell a dispatcher anything else, they won't know where you are. And this is imperative that you be able to tell the police dispatcher that you're going north on Maple Street, south on Maple Street, west on Elm Street, or east on Elm Street. If you can't tell them that, they can't help you. If you can't tell them what road you're on and what your direction of travel is, they can't help you. Am I making myself clear? I hope I am. Knowing the difference between north, south, east, and west is not optional. It's not silly. It's a matter of life and death when you're trying to tell a police dispatcher how to get help to you. So I hope I've used strong enough language to get the point across. You identify yourself, identify your vehicle, make, model, color, identify your direction of travel, and you ask for help. That's exactly what you do. Now, the police may give you specific things to do. They may not. It depends on where you are, what the availability of an officer is, and so forth. They will probably want you to stay on the phone while this is all taking place. And hopefully, you'll be in an area where an officer can respond quickly to give you assistance. Plan B. You go to a place of business, like a convenience store, that is open and is well-lighted, if it's nighttime, well-lighted, and will have witnesses and video cameras. If you think that you might be a victim on the spot, you keep the door locked, the windows up, you park right in front of the door, exactly in front of the door in the no parking zone, and you just lean on that horn and honk continuously to attract attention and bring help to yourself. Now, if you don't have a cell phone, obviously plan B will be plan A because you'll have no choice. What I tell my students is you need to learn all the safe havens on your normal routes of travel. Safe havens, as I just mentioned, one would be all-night convenience stores that are well-lighted and staffed by people. Fire stations, not the volunteer fire department that's sitting there empty and locked up, but firehouses where there's really big, strong guys there 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Police departments that are manned. Now, some of these small-town police departments don't have anybody there, not even a dispatcher at night, because the sheriff's department does their dispatching for them. You need to know the difference. A police department or a substation where there's officers present is a place that you can go as a safe haven. Break coming up. Stay tuned. The call number is 800-313-9443.
Your right to listen and take action shall not be infringed. 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back. 1-800-313-9443.
Uncle Sam taught him to shoot me a little too well. Well, Uncle Sam taught me to shoot a little too well. I mean, can you have too well? I mean, what's too well?
Absolutely not.
You know, that's one thing. They have the apple seed things.
Yeah.
That's right. That's coming up this weekend. Isn't it this weekend? Yeah, we need to put it back up on Freedom's Phoenix there. We have a lot of the readers here. We're going out to Buckeye, which is way west of Phoenix out there. They have a gun range that they do these Appleseed things. I'm sure if you listen to the show, I'm sure he's probably talked about this.
Appleseed.org, I believe, or Revolutionary War Veterans Association.org, RWVA.org.
And these guys have a training class for just become a rifleman. You know, this is how you shoot a rifle. We're going to need you to shoot a rifle. And what was it? Cooper. Cooper used to say, he goes, in a gunfight, you know, you bring a rifle. And he goes, oh, and you tell your friends to bring rifles, too. Rifles win.
A pistol is just a tool to fight your way to your rifle.
get rifles. And I can understand that. When it gets down to it, it's, dang. But if you have to get to that point, you've failed in so many other ways.
Yeah.
You know, this is all about a revolution between the ears. Because our thing has been, if you're not understanding what it is that you are fighting for or against, then what's the point? You know, you're just a tool, a puppet inside there. You're going to be manipulated. And we get that. Oh, I'll give you an example. I don't know if you guys talked about it here. We would get this. It was about a month and a half, 2 months. Well, it was right after Henry Paulson addressed Congress. I remember it was probably a couple of months ago. Henry Paulson gets up and does Congress, blah, 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 blah. Then he goes away. Then all of a sudden, you started getting these emails from the guerrilla resistance, whatever revolutionary. Oh, Sons of Liberty. That's what it was, Sons of Liberty. And get these emails. And I put it up on Freedom's Phoenix as a letter to the editor. And I go, look, man, I've been getting these all. The militia has taken out Henry Paulson. He's dead. We killed him. killed him, got him. That's all. Rise up. Time to rise up. You know, and I'm going, you know, send us an email. Come to our webpage, and we're going to, you know, rise up. Now's the time.
Well, that was just Janet Napolitano's version of send emails about health care scoff laws to Obama.gov or whatever.
Yeah, no, and it was so
it was
obvious.
It was a way to expand the list.
Right. Let's go get them, you know. So, yeah, GorillaResistance.com. I'm like, you know, I so remember this from the 90s. It was exactly the same thing from exactly the same people. You need to understand this.
That was a pretty lame hoax, too. I mean, somebody's, you know, shot Paulson or something. Really? Well, the lamestream media didn't tell us anything about it.
Yeah, the media, that's so last century. It doesn't mean it didn't happen. I'm just,
well, true,
you know,
true.
I'm just like, can I not care? I just don't care.
But, yeah, I know. But get real. I mean, if that had really happened, I mean, they'd certainly publicize that, right?
Maybe not. I'm not going to count on them for that either.
You know that storyline. Some evil terrorist got Paulson. That would be
Well, you know, he instead of coming out and proving it wrong or him or them showing him up, you know, somewhere or something, all of a sudden he's gone. I mean, you didn't hear about him. You didn't see him anywhere.
He was just on vacation.
Let's do it here. Let's go ahead and go up here. Then I'll say, you guys can do it. You just look up, you know, Henry Paulson, news Google to see if he's showing his face somewhere. Your freedom. Oh, they're pushing the button. Hey, well, it was great spending time with you. I'm glad we got to introduce ourselves to you. And we'll let 2A Radio Bill Karns kind of take us out on this. But I'm hopefully you'll listen to our show an hour from now. You just stay tuned here to RBN. And you got Stephen Lindman. You know, Stephen Lindman, he's a writer for Freedom's Phoenix, too. And we publish all his stuff. And then there's us. Declare your independence with me, Ernest Hancock. And we'll talk to you then.